You've heard me talk for years about the breakthrough health benefits of CBD. Now, our friends at CV Sciences have developed an innovative suite of non-CBD products that mimic CBD's healthful effects. CV Sciences' new Plus Health CBD-free line of gummies and capsules. The Plus Health Clarity gummies are packed with DMAE, lion's mane, and rhodiola designed to boost your cognitive performance, enhance memory, and provide natural energy. You need a little peace and calm? Plus Health's Peace Gummies, soothing blend of L-theanine, lemon balm, and St. John's wort support serenity and relaxation without the drowsiness. And if you're on a journey towards optimal health, the Reshape capsules are packed with powerful ingredients like berberine and OEA to support metabolic health and help maintain healthy blood sugar levels. For more information and to order, head over to pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman. Use coupon code Hoffman30. For 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for the new Plus Health non-CBD collection. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today, we're going to talk to one of my good colleagues, really a kindred spirit, because as I gather information to share with the public about news you can use, findings in integrative medicine, so too does Carolyn Gazella. Carolyn is the founder of the Natural Medicine Journal, which I recommend highly to you. If you're a health practitioner, it's a must. If you're sort of a wonky intelligent medicine listener, you're going to gather more information than even you glean from this podcast. I recommend it highly to you, the Natural Medicine Journal. She's also host of the Natural Medicine Journal podcast series, and she co-hosts the 5 to Thrive live weekly radio show, which is for the general public, a popular show that I've appeared on the Cancer Support Network, along with Lise Alschuler, who is one of the foremost integrative oncologists in the country. She's a naturopathic oncologist, and she's phenomenal. So together, they offer, in a really kind of easily digestible format, information on the subject of cancer and lifestyle in general. She's been writing and publishing integrative health information since 1992 and is the author or the co-author of several books and booklets on a variety of holistic health topics. So without further ado, here's Carolyn. Carolyn, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. And this is one of these back at you things because I've been a guest on your podcast. I've collaborated with you on articles. You kind of reached out to me and said, what do you think? And you know, I've contributed my comments to help you review various articles. So I'm turning the tables on you. I'm the host and you're now the guest.
Well, thank you. It's been just a wonderful collaboration with you. And yeah, you're one of my go-to experts and I love it.
Yeah, I guess and most recently, you reached out to me to talk about an article on the impact of omega-3 fatty acids on the brain. But we'll get to that in just a moment. Tell us a little bit about the Natural Medicine Journal. What's the history of that? And what can people find there? How do they access it?
Well, thank you for asking. It's just been one of my life's biggest accomplishments, actually. I just love that journal. It started in 2009. And way back then, I was doing journals for doctors, but they were print journals. And I was approached by the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians who wanted their journal. And I said, what about an online journal? And I also said, what about an online journal, not a trade journal just for naturopathic physicians, but an online peer-reviewed open access journal that showcases the talent of naturopathic physicians among a much broader integrative medicine audience? And they loved the idea, and it just took off. You know, Dr. Lise Alschuler, who's my good friend, your good colleague, she was the president at the time. Karen Howard was the executive director. I reached out to Dr. Tina Kayser, who has been the editor-in-chief for the entire time. And Deirdre Bell was with me for the entire time. And the cool thing, Dr. Hoffman, is that I built the journal and then I wanted an exit strategy. And I reached out to a wonderful company, Diversified Communications. They publish Integrative Practitioner. They publish the Integrative Healthcare.
It's also a great publication. Yeah, that's the go-to for me to find articles of interest for my audience.
Yeah, and the Integrative Healthcare Symposium, which I'm sure you have talked at.
Right here in New York, yeah.
Exactly.
It's a big event here where I get together with all my colleagues in February.
Yeah.
Kind of in the heart of the winter. It's an event that kind of warms you up.
I've been a speaker with Lisa at that event as well. They do a wonderful job. And they just loved the Natural Medicine Journal, and they wanted to bring it into their fold. So a couple of years ago, I sold it to them. And what I love is that I'm still very involved with Diversified and the Natural Medicine Journal. And now I'm involved with Integrative Practitioner. So it has been a really great collaboration. The Natural Medicine Journal is wonderful. I think the biggest take home for any listeners who are healthcare practitioners is that the Natural Medicine Journal is designed to be practical. So we talk about stuff that a practitioner can read about and then apply to their clinical practice the very next day. And it's just some wonderful writers. And I just love it. I love it. And then we started to do the podcast, maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And that has really taken off. Now the Natural Medicine Journal podcast is on every major podcast outlet available. So we have a very broad listenership, and I have complete autonomy with the podcast. I come up with the topics, I come up with the expert, and I go for it. And there's no question, and they just trust me entirely. So I love that part of it too.
And that's why we're kindred spirits, because in a similar spirit, I get to talk about whatever I like. And, I'm responsible to my audience to be truthful, accurate, and precise. But there's no directive from the top to talk about this or not talk about that. And so we have a wide range of topics. So you draw upon largely upon the naturopathic community for input, but also with some MDs and medical doctors like myself. But I have to say that in the past, let's face it, there's been sort of a pejorative on NDs, naturopathic physicians, because in some ways they were placed lower in the hierarchy than putting Dr. Evil quotation marks around this, true doctors. But they've been branded pseudoscientific, the series of alternative practices and so on. But I have to say that, over my career, I've been really impressed with the education and the scholarship and the precision of NDs, naturopathic physicians, when it comes to addressing, important lifestyle, supplement, and issues that are poorly handled in the conventional medicine literature. Is that not your finding?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been doing this since 1992. That's when I met my first naturopathic physician. And I love the naturopathic community so much. It's amazing. And that's why I wanted to showcase that talent with the Natural Medicine Journal. So I'm hoping that the Natural Medicine Journal, starting in 2009, I'm hoping that we help, bring forward the talent within the naturopathic community, because there is so much there. I will say, though, back in the day, you are absolutely correct. A naturopathic doctor was not given the respect as they are given today. And I think we still have some work to do there. But I have seen such a dramatic change in the 30 years that I've been in this industry, and the talented doctors that I have met. And now I'm interviewing a lot more integrative medical, holistic medical docs like yourself. People who are going through that wonderful fellowship over at the University of Arizona that Dr. Lise Altshuler, heads up. These docs are so impressive. I feel like the naturopathic physicians can make such a valuable contribution. And also, you know, the naturopathic, I think there's this misconception that naturopathic doctors hate drugs. And
right.
the true...
But it's like an either or, you know, it's
exactly.
like... Exactly. It's alternative. In other words, we eschew conventional medicine. We're all about herbs and potions and, you know, vitamins.
Yeah. And nothing could be further from the truth. Certainly there's a segment, but the naturopathic doctors that I work with, they're integrative in their approach. Mm-hmm. It's not an either or, it's an and. And they embrace surgery and they embrace pharmaceuticals, and then they support the patient who goes through surgery and who takes pharmaceuticals or chemotherapy or whatever it is. So it's kind of fun for me because over the last three decades, I've seen this industry change dramatically, and I've actually been able to be a part of it. And some of the deep friendships that I've created with the naturopathic community, I'll treasure forever. I mean, these are some really, really great docs.
Indeed. And to prove the point, recently in the Natural Medicine Journal, there was an article that talked about Ozempic and the semaglutide medications, you know, these powerful weight loss medications, and considerations that are, shall we say, natural or integrative when these medications are used. So a recognition that, hey, a lot of people are going to be using these things. There are advantages to the use of these medications, but there are some considerations that can augment their effectiveness if we adhere to naturopathic or natural medicine perspectives, right?
Yeah, I think that was a podcast that I did, and my expert was a diabetes expert, and of course, Ozempic is a diabetes drug, and I really wanted to cover that thoroughly. And you know, she brought up some great points. You know, this is a life-saving drug. She also brought up some great concerns. You know, this is a very potent drug that shouldn't be used for the person who just wants to lose 10 pounds, you know?
And, you know, get ready for Aunt Sally's wedding and lose that, you know, 8 to 10 pounds.
Yeah. And then have a heck of a time trying to get off that drug and then have the weight come back and have it come back even further. And, you know, so yeah, I personally am concerned about that drug and that drug category. So that's why I wanted to talk it through, you know, with this expert. But you're right that, you know, and I have also did an article with Dr. Beverly Yates, who's a diabetes naturopath. And she said the same thing. She's like, these are life-saving drugs. I mean, we can't do without them in the diabetes community. But, you know, however, so that's what I try to do. You know, I try to like, bring up things that are on my mind. I mean, I'm reading the scientific literature, you know, even though I'm semi-retired, weekly, I'm reading journals and I actually get some great ideas from your column, because you're covering, you know, cutting edge stuff as well. So when something sticks out and I think, okay, our readers and our listeners are going to want to hear about this, because let's face it, Dr. Hoffman, they're busy. So they're not reading the scientific literature yep. as much as I can. So when something sticks out, I want to shine a light on it.
Indeed. And what's interesting too is that naturopaths in the past were sort of generalists. And these days we have highly specialized naturopaths. Recently I interviewed Dr. Gio Espinosa, who's unique as a urological naturopath. And then of course there's Lee Zalschuler, who is an integrative oncologist with a naturopathic background, and on it goes, you know, gastro, cardiology, renal, and I find that some of my most interesting guests are naturopaths with specific orientations who are just laser-like focus on one area in particular, and they bring a lot of insight.
Oh, absolutely. I interviewed on my podcast an autoimmune naturopath. There's endocrinology. There's a trade organization for naturopathic endocrinologists. As you mentioned, cardiologists. I love that, but I also do love the fact that the naturopaths can also fill a gap with primary care, because I feel like we're in a bit of a troubled place there when it comes to healthcare. And I think a naturopath is really great at primary care as well. So, but you're absolutely right. The specialties, I mean, oncology was the first in the naturopathic mm-hmm. community, but boy, it has mushroomed dramatically.
I will say that my profession, the MD profession, perhaps also the DO profession, we jealously guard our prerogative to practice And in some states, the AMA or the local state medical societies lobby against the licensure and the approval of naturopathic physicians out of monopolistic motives to guard their sinecure as healthcare providers. And I think that that's a shame. I'm all for, you know, get the NDs involved. I mean, look, there's no question that, you know, if you need, you know, a neurosurgeon, I'm not sure that there are a lot of naturopathic neurosurgeons. It's fine. Right. Great. That's, you know, leave that to the MDs. But when it comes to primary care and, you know, offering an integrated perspective on various medical conditions, the training that they get is superb. And you may think, well, they're just going to be trained with all kinds of unscientific gobbledygook in their naturopathic schools. That is not the case. It is very rigorous, and the admissions requirements are very rigorous. So these days, sometimes I get, you know, questions from somebody who says, I'm really interested in natural medicine. I'm not sure which path to pursue. Shall I become an MD or shall I become an ND? And I'll sometimes tell them that, hey, you know, even though you may have great GPA and you could easily get into top medical school, if you're passionate about integrative medicine, you're going to get a better exposure to it in an ND school.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, I've been following you for a lot of years. And one of the things I respect about you most is that you do have that collaborative mentality that not every MD will have. And certainly the profession as a whole is lacking sometimes. So I think you were ahead of your time. But now that I'm interviewing a lot of these integrative medical doctors who are going back to get integrative fellowship training, they just strike me more like you. Like they're now all of a sudden we're having more Dr. Hoffmans in the world, which I think is a good thing.
Indeed. Okay. Hopefully we're, you know, inspiring more and more people to get passionate about this approach. So let's take a look at one of our recent collaborations, which is, you know, so this is how it works. I'll get an email from you saying, hey, I want to do an article about this. What's your take? And I'll spend some time and I'll, you know, do a deep dive on, you know, the article that you shared with me. I'll share some impressions with you. And you're a wordsmith. You take my, you know, impressionistic comments and craft them into a tightly worded, concise article. So let's talk a little bit about the latest collaboration that we did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I make it always clear when I'm being interviewed is that I'm not a doctor. One of the things I love about my work is that I do get to collaborate with other doctors. So it's rare, honestly, for me to write a technical article for doctors and not reach out to another doctor. So it's great. So I read this article. I thought of you right away. And it was on omega-3s. You and I have actually done podcasts on omega-3s and kind of, you know, looking at the confusion regarding omega-3s. Right. And omega-3s have sometimes been, you know, trashed in the medical literature, yeah. Unfoundedly so. So I reach out to you then. But this really struck me because it was on APOE4, which is the marker that increases risk of Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And what struck me was that, the people who took the omega-3 who had that, marker, actually had benefit. And what that made me think of, Dr. Hoffman, is way back in the day when I was looking at research regarding the BRCA gene. So my family, has the BRCA gene. And in the 1990s, we were studied by Creighton University and we were found to be one of the largest known carriers of the BRCA gene in North America. Not such a great claim to fame.
Yeah.
However, in my work with Dr. Altshuler, you know, I did a deep dive on BRCA, I learned that even BRCA carriers who carry normal body weight, eat more fruits and vegetables, even though they have that mutation, they actually reduce their risk of developing breast cancer. And that's what made this article, that's what made me think of it, because I'm thinking now there's a whole slew of people who are testing positive and thinking that they're going to get Alzheimer's and thinking like they have nothing that they can do about that.
It's the crack of doom.
Exactly.
But it should be a wake-up call to risk, because virtually no genes are completely deterministic. Mm-hmm. There is genetics, which kind of, I guess the analogy, genetics loads the gun, and something called epigenetics pulls the trigger. And the trigger does not always have to be pulled through epigenetics, which is lifestyle involving exercise, diet, sleep, perhaps supplementation, and perhaps other factors, avoidance of environmental pollutants. We can modify the expression of a gene that may be not favorable. Mm-hmm. So, looking at the APOE4 gene, it definitely increases the risk for Alzheimer's. Now, genes come in pairs. There's, if you got two, you're homozygous. We're going to get a little terminology here. If you have one, you're heterozygous. So having one, we think, increases your risk for Alzheimer's disease substantially by threefold. Having two could be up to 10 to 20-fold increase of risk. And in fact, a fairly significant proportion of people with a double hit, the homozygous, have premature cognitive decline or Alzheimer's disease by the time they're 60 or 70. However, that's not the entire picture, because there are other genes around it that modify, and lifestyle has an impact. So, so in this study, look, we know that omega-3s are probably good for the brain. I mean, we know that, say, in studies, prenatal studies, that women who consume omega-3s might have smarter offspring. So it almost from cradle to grave, there's evidence that there are benefits to omega-3 fatty acid supplementation. But, sometimes this is what's called an association, an association. So an association might be, okay, people take a lot of vitamins, they're healthier. But it may be that people who take a lot of vitamins, they're more careful about many aspects of their lifestyles and so on and so on, So association, that's okay. Mm-hmm. But we have actually an experimental setting, so maybe you can describe what they did in this study.
Well, I can't remember the details right off the top of my head, so maybe you could do sure. that. But I will. You bring up such a good point about the fact that, so when I'm talking to women about the BRCA gene, so BRCA is a cell repair gene, and it's a very significant, important cell repair gene. But we have other cell repair genes. So my feeling is that epigenetically, when we do these things like healthy diet and exercise and carrying normal body weight, epigenetically, we're potentially influencing the other cell repair genes to kind of shore up and yes. take over where BRCA cannot.
There's a lot of redundancy in these systems. Nature, mm-hmm. nature built us to have backup systems.
Right. So I'm wondering if that's what's happening with the omega-3s and the APOE4. Gene.
Yeah. So just to set the stage, there's this thing, which is one of the reasons why, I've been offered free MRIs, from potential sponsors. They say, come to our radiology clinic and get a full body MRI. Mm-hmm. And I've said, no, thank you. And one of the reasons for that is that you find stuff. And if you look at the spine or the brain or the kidneys, or even the arteries of someone who is 60 or 70 or, older, you're going to see stuff that is a little disconcerting. And in the brains of people who are older, we see what we call WMLs, white matter lesions. Mm-hmm. And these appear as little bright spots, and they're a harbinger of cognitive decline. So in this study, they looked at WMLs, and they picked a bunch of people, relatively small study. I think they were a couple hundred people, and they found some people who had some WMLs. I think the people were in their 60s and 70s, but not so many WMLs that they were highly likely to have dementia. So these people were essentially, quote, healthy, but they had WMLs. And then they gave them fish oil in moderate amounts. They didn't give them like super high doses. They give them right. doses that you or I might take on a routine basis. Mm-hmm. Basically two high quality fish oil pills per day. And lo and behold, the experiment failed. And I mm-hmm. put that in Dr. Evil quotation marks again, because what happened was overall, there wasn't a slowing in the progression of these WMLs at the end of the study. I think it was like a 3-year study, really short time, you know, because really you want to look at this over decades, but hey, you know, studies are limited. You know, they don't have unlimited funds, lose track of people. So they did it over a short period of time. They found it didn't really slow the progression of WMLs overall. But when they looked at a subgroup of the people with the gene we're talking about, the APOE, now these people are much more prone to having WMLs, which are an indicator of cognitive decline and Alzheimer's progression. There was an effect. So this makes me think, you know, that there's a lot of studies that look at this or that or the other vitamin or this or that or the other intervention, and they're looking at an aggregate. They're looking at pretty healthy people, maybe not very high risk people. And that's why it sometimes pays to look at subgroups, like highly vulnerable subgroups, like the people who have the APOEs. And then you'll see something that actually pops out in terms of statistical significance.
Yeah, that's what caught my eye. You know, I felt like that was really the headline for me. And that was the take home message for me. And I felt like that's what we could apply to other areas of research as well.
Indeed. So they also came up with something interesting. And I looked at the whole thing. And so if people ask, you know, what's better for the brain, EPA or DHA? You know, you've heard this controversy. And like, I wonder sometimes, like, should I take the DHA or, you know, this DHA rich formula? Or should I take the EPA rich formula? Because they're both helpful for the brain. I mean, EPA is a very wonderful anti-inflammatory. DHA, we add it to infant formula because we know that it's helpful for brain and sensory organ development. So they came up with something interesting. I just wrote it down here. Which is more important, EPA or DHA? Their conclusion was that an EPA dominant formula may provide some benefit in the APOE carriers with no dementia, and the DHA dominant formula may benefit non-carriers, in other words, like the average person with mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. So it's almost like, oh, that's kind of interesting. They're going to need more studies to pursue that, but that might offer a real kind of personalized medicine approach to brain health, where we decide, you know, which is the appropriate fish oil formula that is helpful.
Yeah, I was surprised at that because honestly, I didn't even realize there was much debate there. I thought it was always more EPA than DHA, and that's the way to go. And, you know, so I was actually surprised to see that. And when you look at their commentary and they point out other studies where DHA was prominent in the formula, in the supplement. I thought that was interesting. And like you said, I think that we need a lot more research in that area to be definitive. But I think that that's, and I think it does speak to this area of integrative practitioners wanting to be more personalized and wanting to really target for their individual patients. So brain health isn't brain health isn't brain health. Let's dig in. You know, same with my high risk being BRCA. You know, I need to be treated differently than somebody who's not BRCA positive. I think it does help illustrate that personalized medicine is we're getting closer to that for sure.
Indeed. And it brings up some questions like, well, what if they hadn't waited till these people had WMLs? You know, what if they had identified APOE early? You know, you can get that test basically at birth because APOE is a genetic thing. It doesn't develop over time. You're born with it. Mm-hmm. So perhaps if they start an intervention in childhood, maybe we're going to get even more robust results in terms of prevention. Or, you know, also the dosage. I mean, it's conceivable that a higher dosage of fish oil, which is feasible. I mean, look, there's no question, you know, you take 6 or 8 or 12 fish oil capsules per day, you're going to get some burping. You may have some gastrointestinal distress, but a couple a day is a very modest proposition.
Yeah. I think your point about doing these tests earlier and having earlier interventions is brilliant. Because we are waiting. We do wait before we get that information. And sometimes when we get that information, it's too late or it's just a far more challenging. So that's an interesting observation for sure.
So do we have to wait 30 years for a double-blind placebo-controlled trial to be completed before we undertake this type of prevention? It's a relatively innocuous intervention. Mm-hmm. The downsides are minimal, perhaps a little bit to your pocketbook, but the benefits are so robust because probably there's nothing more precious than a brain. Mm-hmm. I'm all over this.
Yeah. And I think too, that there are other things that you can do for brain function. It's not just omega-3.
Yeah, it's not exactly. It's not a one note Charlie kind of thing. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that would help the patient really fine tune their focus when it comes to diet and lifestyle and dietary supplements, which omega-3, of course, would be a part of that.
Right. And of course, we have a big looming problem with dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. As our population ages, and it seems to be increasing in prevalence. And so much is being expended to find a quote cure and to find, these amyloid busting medications that have some efficacy, but also have some serious downsides and are extremely expensive. This, I think, is where a more naturopathic or natural medicine approach is cost effective and really could make a dent in the incidence of this terrible disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree.
So good point at which to pause, because I want to talk a little bit more about things that you have highlighted, because, I follow your work very closely, and you give me cues in terms of things that I want to share with my audience. So in part two, we'll talk a little bit about some of the hot issues in integrative medicine that you've highlighted in the Natural Medicine Journal podcast and in the articles that you've written with outstanding practitioners. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our guest is Carolyn Gazella, the founder of the NMJ, the Natural Medicine Journal. We'll be right back with more.